From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, a different crisis was capturing global attention, especially for young people. Climate change was receiving an unprecedented moment in the spotlight, from the presidential campaign here in the U.S. to student climate strikes around the world. Now that's all changed thanks to the coronavirus. This hour on The Exchange, on the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, how the pandemic has dramatically altered the approach for climate activists and diverted the attention of policymakers. Also, why scientists say these two global crises have a lot in common. Exchange listeners, as always, we'd love to hear from you. On this Earth Day, how are you sorting this all out? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. In this first part of our show, we'll focus on young people and the role they're playing. With us now are two activists from 350 New Hampshire, a grassroots climate change group. They are Kai Parlett, a high school senior from Randolph at the Holderness School, and Lily Tagblow, a sophomore at Manchester Central High School. Also with us is NHPR's Annie Ropeek. She's our energy and environment reporter. Welcome to everyone. And Kai, I want to start with you. Like anybody involved in the environmental movement, today was supposed to be a big, big day, the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, with a focus on climate change. People have been planning this for years, as you know, Kai. What were you supposed to be doing this day?
Well, we were supposed to have another round of global climate strikes, like the ones in September and December. We were also planning on having sit-ins at Chris Sununu's office and Chris Pappas's office, as they are New Hampshire politicians who have varying opinions of climate change. We wanted to put pressure on them. And really, our biggest goal was just to get as many people as possible involved and at direct actions and strikes.
So sit-ins, strikes, as we've been seeing, you know, around the world by students for a number of months anyway, events, protests, rallies. How about you, Lily? What were your plans for today?
Of course. So these days, these actions are one of my favorite parts of this line of work. And on this day, I would have been empowering others. I would have brought groups of friends from my school to walk down the block to our park, and I would have recruited people to speak and use their voice and express what's so important to them, which I've done so many times before. And it's a fantastic experience to be able to be around people who support you and are fighting for the same mission. So then we would have done the sit-ins, like Kai said, we would have marched in, we would have sat in, and we would have chanted and sang songs, and we would have moved forward.
So Lily, I'm going to ask you this, and Kai too. I mean, now we're hearing that, you know, there's going to be events online and so forth. There's hashtag Earth Day Live, 24 hours of streaming and discussion and performances and teach-ins and so forth. But does it feel, Lily, a little bit deflated?
I think there's definitely some difficulty with going online. But I think since we're all going for the same mission, we all have the same goals in mind, it can be just as powerful as an in-person thing. It's really the connection of being together and sharing our voices.
That's Kai, what are your thoughts on that? Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know, I think a lot of people are disappointed that it couldn't be in person. I mean, I'm disappointed that we couldn't have the in-person events that we had initially planned. But at the same time, I think the sort of silver lining that we can take out of that is that there are a lot of people who would have been doing other things who now have the opportunity to be involved in these online events.
Because they're at home doing remote learning or trying to do remote learning, as we've heard. Annie, I want to fold you in as NHPR's environment reporter. You too had big plans for this 50th anniversary. You were going to be the lead player, really, in a newsroom-wide effort to focus on climate. So what was that going to look like before all this hit?
Yeah, we had big plans, and, you know, we're trying now to retool them to kind of fit this transformed world. We are still working on launching a big newsroom-wide climate change project. We had planned all these new resources we were going to put online to help people connect and understand this issue and answer their questions more directly, tell new kinds of stories about climate change, and really make it a priority, especially for me on my beat, but also for people like our health reporter and our education reporter, and kind of make this one of our bigger themes that we follow. And we still want to do that. It is drastically different to try to think about how to do that now. And that's part of why I wanted to sort of start with this show as like the restart of how we're going to do climate change coverage during the pandemic, because it's just impossible to do stories on this the way I would have 2 months ago. They either don't feel as important or it's hard to just make space for them on air. So we're having to think about this in a whole new way.
Well, and what better day to launch it, Annie, than the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. And I know as part of this project, you have been looking, Annie, deeply into the role that young people are playing. So I want to give you the chance to ask Kai and Lily some questions.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. So Kai, I'll start with you because you actually came to me first with the idea to get some youth climate voices on the radio on this day in lieu of your traditional in-person strikes. And, you know, you've told me that your activism feels even more important in a lot of ways than your schoolwork right now. Can you tell me why that is?
Yeah, well, I think specifically for me as a senior, I'm looking forward into the future. And, you know, I know where I'm going to college. I know what I'm doing next year. So school doesn't seem as important to me as the climate crisis is right now. You know, I think that in 20 years, I'm going to look back and not remember what grades I got as a second semester senior doing distance learning, but I want to look back and remember what I did to combat the climate crisis in this time.
Yeah, Lily, how about you as a sophomore?
I think that's been a message that's been echoed so many times at these rallies and strikes, that there's no point in school if we have an unstable Earth. For our generation, for the generations in the future. Like Kai said, it was a beautiful point. Our grades are not going to matter if we're worried about dying from natural disasters and if our children will have a survivable climate. So I think school has never really been above climate in my mind ever, because it's the fate of our planet, as opposed to some knowledge that we may or may not use, like pre-calculus. Like, come on. But
yeah. So these are both crises that, you know, really touch on everything in society. They're not just, you know, singular issues. Lily, how has the pandemic highlighted for you some of these big structural inequalities that you're hoping might be addressed through our climate response?
I think it's really brought into view how the government is so quick to push aside climate, because how much climate change media is out there now. It's all about the coronavirus pandemic, when really climate is so tied into this pandemic in so many ways, in the ways of getting resources, in the ways of smog and people not having respiratory problems because of the smog and because of the pollution, and that's affecting their response to getting the coronavirus. And yet the funding is all going to the pandemic. The media is all going to the pandemic, and we need to, and it's really visible now how little the government cares about the crisis, the climate crisis.
Yeah, and then Kai, as far as the response to coronavirus, how are you thinking about how climate response might sort of work to support that, to kind of help us respond better to coronavirus?
Well, I think that it's really important to note that the Green New Deal, which is the piece of legislature that AOC and various more liberal democratic politicians are pushing, has solutions that will impact both climate change and the coronavirus. Healthcare for all, a federal jobs guarantee, things like that will help so many American people in the wake of the coronavirus, as well as the Green New Deal encompasses things that are really good for the climate, more renewables, less fossil fuels, banning fracking, things like that.
And we were already, you know, in the middle of such a heated debate about proposals like the Green New Deal, you know, on the presidential campaign trail, and we were seeing more questions about it just in the sort of political discourse. And I wonder, you know, how it has felt for you guys to really be just brought to a screeching halt in the middle of all of that momentum because of the incredibly fast onset of this pandemic. Lily, what's that felt like for you?
I think it's been a drastic turn of how we're doing things. So now, instead of working on in-person connections, it's the letter writing to senators demanding the Green New Deal. It's things like wanting a people's bailout that we need. It's just the momentum has continued, but just changed in the way that we're doing things.
Yeah. And then how about for you, Kai, especially as a graduating senior, what has this been like emotionally for you?
You know, I think that there are bad parts and then there are the few good parts. Like, I really didn't want my high school graduation to be a Zoom call, and that is super unfortunate. But at the same time, it's giving me and other youth across the state a lot more time to focus our energy on climate activism.
And then both of you have said before to me that, you know, you see the climate crisis obviously is affecting your generation more than any other. But you've also said that you feel the pandemic, you know, the fallout from the pandemic will affect your generation disproportionately. Kai, can you talk a little bit about that? What do you see as sort of the effects of coronavirus long term for people your age?
Well, I think that that's sort of two facets. Economically, I'm just starting my career. I'm going into college. I'm taking a gap year next year. And I think that as I begin my career, I'm looking a lot at what the coronavirus is doing to the economy. And it's not great. And then at the same time, if we keep going the way we're going, this isn't going to be the last global pandemic that I'm going to see in my lifetime. And maybe it won't even be the worst one. And to be honest, I am not super inclined to want to do this again.
Yeah. And so, Lily, for you, I mean, is this changing your plans for the future at all? Or, you know, knowing that we may be heading into a recession, the lessons we're learning from the pandemic, how are you factoring that into your plans to, you know, continue in your climate activism?
That's a good point. It's definitely brought some questions into the mix, because at first I was thinking I need a job that is empowering, that is important to society, and it doesn't matter what the pay is. But what if a situation like this happens again and I'm worried about survival based on my pay? And so if I don't have a job that I can rely on, I won't be safe. I won't be safe if this happens again.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it really underscores the importance, I think, of taking lessons right away from the pandemic and factoring those into your pursuit of climate response in the future. Lily, we talked before about why you think that people and governments are responding sort of differently to the pandemic than they have to climate change. And you said it's the sort of take on the frog in boiling water analogy. Can you tell us what you're thinking about that?
Yeah, it's, I mean, like, Sununu has vetoed so many climate legislation bills, and yet he was so quick to act in this pandemic. So we know that he's capable of doing these actions that we need, but some are just being swept aside. And things like the Green New Deal need to be passed because they're going to be successful, because they work with local governments to make the changes that work for that community. Pandemic, this is a mess. This is, we're doing the best that we can. We're throwing things all over the place. We don't have clear legislation. But for climate, we do. We have the Green New Deal that will work, and we know that it will work. And yet it's not being passed. So I think that's really something that I've noticed.
Yeah. And Laura, I'll hand it back to you for a second.
Right. Well, I want to remind our listeners that we are talking on the 50th anniversary of Earth Day about all the plans for climate action today. That was going to be the focus. And young people have really been on the forefront of this with climate strikes here in the U.S. and around the world. We are talking with two high school students here in New Hampshire about their thoughts, what their plans were, what their plans are now, and some of their hopes and fears for the future. And again, listeners, we invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Annie, Kai, and Lily, let's take a call from Travis in Manchester. Hi, Travis. Thanks for being with us. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
just wanted to call and address the comment that was made earlier about things like pre-calculus and schoolwork not seeming important in light of kind of the climate crisis and everything, and just stress the importance of the maths and sciences specifically in combating climate change long-term. I just didn't want anybody to hear kind of that it's not important in the grand scheme of it all, and just kind of look at the bigger picture and kind of the value that these scientists are going to add to addressing the solution in the long term.
Thank you, Travis, for calling. And a little bit later, we are going to talk to a young person who is planning to study math and science once she graduates from high school. But Lily, do you want to address that comment from Travis that it's important to have your climate activism grounded in facts, grounded in science, grounded in knowledge?
Of course. Yeah. For some people that are going into STEM, that is 100% applicable, and I totally respect what he's saying. I don't think I'm going to go into that, so for me, it's not extremely applicable, and I was more saying not everyone needs to be a scientist. I trust the scientists because there's been so many studies and so much research, but I myself am not a scientist. So I think for me, it's the difference of something that isn't applicable to my career versus something that affects the entire planet, which is climate change. So for different people, that would be a different class. It was just a random example.
Sure. And I understand that it's, you know, when you're feeling overwhelmed, it's easy to just feel like, I don't even want to say distracted, but that certain things don't matter. So I appreciate the tone of the comment that you made, Lily. I want to ask both of you one last question. And Kai, I'll start with you. What's one key aspect of this that you really want people to focus on, even during a pandemic? Because it is hard to focus on climate change. It seems off in the future, and this pandemic is in front of us right now. So go ahead, Kai.
Well, I think that it's really important for people to understand that the climate crisis doesn't go on pause just because the coronavirus pandemic is happening more at the forefront. And that, unfortunately, right now, we need to put a lot of focus onto both of these issues. Because long-term, if climate change continues to go unchecked, it's going to kill more people than the coronavirus is. And that's really scary for me, because that's probably going to be either in my lifetime or in my kids' lifetime.
Well, Kai, it's really good to hear from you. Thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Kai Parlett, a high school senior from Randolph at the Holderness School. And same question for you, Lily. What is one thing that you really want to leave with our listeners, you know, kind of urging them to focus on this issue, even though there is so much in front of us at this time?
I think the most important thing is trying to get as much information from different sources as you can, and then using that to forge a path on what you want to fight for and what you want to believe in. Not just going by what one person says or what one person thinks, really taking it as much as possible and fighting for what is right.
Well, Lily, thank you. I really appreciate you being here today. Happy Earth Day.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's Lily Tagblow. Again, she's a sophomore at Manchester Central High School. She and Kai are both climate activists talking about what they had planned to do today on the 50th anniversary of Earth Day and what they hope will happen coming up next. Well, coming up on our show, Annie Ropeek will stay with us, and we'll talk with two veterans of Earth Day and climate science, and we'll take more of your questions. So give us a call like Travis did, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today's the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, and we're looking at climate activism in the midst of a pandemic. Send us your thoughts by email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook, tweet us, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With me for the hour, NHPR's environment reporter, Annie Ropeek. And with us now are Eric Osterberg, Associate Professor of Earth Sciences at Dartmouth College, and Roger Stevenson, Northeast Director at the Union of Concerned Scientists. And all of you, let's go right back to our listeners and get their thoughts on this. Lyndon's calling from Andover. Hi, Lyndon. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I'd just like to say that this shows us that we really need to listen to scientists and what they're saying, and that we shouldn't wait to take action because the economy is just going to get worse the longer we wait. So
Lyndon, listen to scientists and take action on the economy.
Yes.
Yeah, and you sound like a young person, if I can say that, right?
Yes.
So what are your thoughts, sort of, you know, given that your generation is going to be facing the impacts of climate more than mine is?
I think that this is Mom. And,
hi, Mom.
Hi, I'm Molly from Andover. And I have my whole family, we have youth activists. We have 8, 10, and 11-year-olds that are youth activists. And they're very concerned about climate change to the point where sometimes my 8-year-old can't even sleep at night. So for them, COVID-19 is scary, but I think the climate crisis is scarier because it's a longer-term problem.
So, Molly, how do you talk to them about that? Because, you know, I appreciate that you're trying to educate them, but they should be able to sleep at night and they need some hope for the future.
That's exactly right. So we've had to pull back a little bit on some of that education because there was a lot of anxiety around some of those issues and trying to find ways to participate in climate activism that's positive and that can find some hope. And I struggle with that personally. I really do. But I think going to rallies, we've been to rallies in Concord. We've been to rallies for climate strikes, and that's very empowering to them. So honestly, this Earth Day feels a really, really deflated because I can't have that sense of togetherness with my kids as climate activists when they see so many people involved and excited. Online, it's just, you don't get the same feeling or energy.
Yeah. Molly, thank you very much for taking the phone, but also for letting Lyndon talk to us. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having the show today.
Again, our phone number for you to join us today in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Roger Stevenson, I did want to turn to you again at the Union of Concerned Scientists. I'm so struck by what Molly said. She's trying to educate her kids, but it's getting to the point where they are, you know, having some anxiety issues. They can't sleep at night. They're so worried. How do you folks at the Union of Concerned Scientists sort of communicate these messages without having people just, you know, feel like there's nothing they can do and they might as well give up?
Well, thank you, Laura. And I want to say Kai and Lily were very inspiring. They brought me back 50 years to my experiences in high school near the first Earth Day. I think the recent caller, again, gives inspiration, and the mom hits the nail on the head. I want to stress that there are many actions that could, help us recover from the pandemic, the coronavirus pandemic. They can also help address the climate crisis. You know, first, you know, the primary thing is to fund public health efforts that keep people safe and provide financial relief. And that's going to be happening in Congress this week again. But we need to invest and rebuild better ways to put the country on a better path. That means the government's going to be directly and massively guiding the direction of our economy. Infrastructure is going to be important, and infrastructure programs are job creators. I think Kai and Lily both said, yeah, we got to make decisions based on scientific data. But we need to create jobs that strengthen community resilience. We have a moment right now, a circumstance that may not happen again for years or decades. We can create jobs that strengthen community resilience. We can speed up the delivery of clean energy, energy efficiency, and transportation infrastructure. And we got to do so in ways that the policies we adopt will benefit all communities, including those who have been historically disadvantaged.
Well, and Eric, I want to turn to you about the science. There's been a lot of speculation about the link between climate change and the coronavirus. I was reading a lot about this yesterday. What do we know for real, Eric, about a scientific link between climate and corona? And what feels to you like just guessing?
It's a great question, Laura. So there is no evidence that we have at the moment that climate change either led to the creation or the start of the coronavirus epidemic, or that climate change is making it any worse at the moment. But there are some interesting overlaps between climate change and coronavirus, particularly in terms of the way that both are made worse or may have been created. And so that's in terms of deforestation. We know that as we burn the forests, we're increasing our carbon pollution, which of course makes climate change much worse. But we're also driving animals to extinction and driving animals into places they're not used to being through habitat loss. And that puts humans in contact with animals and may be one of the contributing factors to the cause of this particular virus and to other viruses that we've seen recently.
So the United Nations environmental chief said 75% of infectious disease comes from wildlife, and that climate change and habitat disruption are putting people and humans together in ways that they shouldn't be. So just to make sure that we've got that right, Eric, so it's not that climate caused coronavirus, but some of the same factors that are driving climate change drove coronavirus. Is that correct, Eric?
Yeah, that's the way we think about it right now. And it's possible that we'll find out additional information as we learn more about the coronavirus. But we do know that as we drive people and species into closer contact through deforestation and habitat loss, we're doing two things. One, we're making climate change a lot worse. And two, we're putting ourselves more at risk for these kinds of viruses.
Well, we've got lots of emails from listeners who want to jump in on this topic. Again, talking about climate activism that was supposed to be big today on the 50th anniversary of Earth Day and how that has changed because of all the social distancing and limitations of the coronavirus. And you can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. Geraldine in Salisbury wrote, "I was a senior in high school on the first Earth Day, and I couldn't be happier and more distressed that these students are carrying the torch for Mother Earth. 50 years and change so slow," Geraldine says. She also says, "I think this virus is an opportunity in the face of those who said we couldn't make the lifestyle changes needed to save the planet to stop, consider what we need to do, slow down the consumption, and rebuild thoughtfully." Geraldine, thank you for writing. And this is a point that a lot of people are talking about these days. And Annie, I am going to turn to you, but want to hear from Roger and Eric as well. Some environmental groups are actually finding some, if not hope, Annie, because the pandemic is terrible, but lessons learned, as Geraldine says, that they hope will transfer to the way society approaches climate. What are you hearing, Annie, from the people you talk to?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been so interesting to watch how the response to coronavirus and just the ways in which we're handling it as a society are so parallel to how people envision a climate response playing out in both good and bad ways, right? I mean, there's sort of, it's really showing the strain on our preparedness systems and just, you know, how hard it is to respond to these fast-moving sort of scientifically squishy disasters in real time, even for climate change, which is happening in a slower timescale, but, you know, has the individual related weather events that are, you know, singular disasters and that kind of thing. And so it's got a lot to teach us about preparedness. It's also got a lot to teach us about our ability to quickly mobilize, you know, on the government and then, as Geraldine says, on the individual level, to make lifestyle changes. And it's just incredible how much more willing people seem to respond, or, you know, many people seem to respond to coronavirus in that way than we have been to climate change. It's really shown us some of the ways in which climate change is, you know, it's harder to see, it's harder to feel threatened by, especially if you are a person of more privilege or if you live in certain places. And so I think that environmental groups are hoping that they can use some of these the ways in which people have responded to coronavirus to show people, look, you can do it. Governments can do it. We can do it for climate change. And in fact, as Kai and Lily were saying, and as Roger has said, you know, we can do it in a way that will actually aid in climate response, help us dig out from coronavirus. It's all connected in that way. And, you know, we've done it once in this situation, and maybe we can do it again. I mean, I've also heard people that are feeling very hopeless because they say, we're watching it happen now, and it hasn't happened for climate change, and so I fear that it will not happen. And so it's been a really interesting balance to see people trying to decide whether this is a positive or a negative message that we're hearing from the coronavirus response, and I really don't know how to answer that question.
Well, and I'm glad you raised that, because people do have varying emotional reactions. NHPR has been surveying its listeners, and especially in light of this climate project that you're working on, Annie, you've been surveying them on climate change. Here's a comment we got from a listener who says he's putting the two together in terms of societal impact. David wrote, "I was already concerned about climate change, but the pandemic has actually had me more worried about it. The past few weeks have given us a taste of what a disrupted life could be like." David says, "While climate change has different effects than a pandemic, the scale of the impact on daily life could be similar." So that's David. And then a more hopeful message from Susan in Sunapee, who says, "The pandemic is showing the ability of societies to make difficult decisions in the face of clear and present threat. If a global consensus on the threat of climate change can be forged, collective action is possible." Roger, I want to turn back to you. How much do you share the feelings of David or of Susan, you know, that this is terrible and it shows that we can't respond, or that as awful as this is, it is showing us that we can respond? How do you feel, Roger?
Well, Laura, I think there is a lesson here. You know, there has been an erosion of science and of government for the last 30 years. And I see the denial of climate change over the last 30 years compressed into the denial of COVID-19 pandemic over the last 10 weeks, and we're coming out of that series of denial with COVID-19. I do think that there are lessons to learn here, and that, you know, there is going to be a role for government, but government does not open and shut on a dime. It doesn't start on a dime. We need a sustained government response. Earth Day started with people, and it ended with the delivery by government of the Environmental Protection Agency, of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, two key organizations. Ironically, there have been enforcement rollbacks in both of those agencies in the midst of this pandemic. This month, OSHA rolled back COVID reporting requirements by limiting requirements only to the healthcare industry, only to correctional facilities and emergency response employers. And the Trump administration has issued a final rule to dramatically roll back vehicle emissions and efficiency standards. What does that mean to both COVID and climate change? Well, doing so, you know, we are going to emit a billion more tons of global warming emissions.
And as we heard earlier, air pollution does exacerbate, the effects of coronavirus. You have a much more chance of becoming very sick or dying if you've been exposed to air pollution long term. I want to take another call around this topic of the global response, governmental responses, linking coronavirus with climate change. Marge is calling in from Marlboro. Hi, Marge. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us today. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, Marge. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. I really support the Green New Deal that was talked about earlier by the young people, and efforts like a goal of 100% renewable. But how are we going to get there? Something I've been working with is the Citizens Climate Lobby. They're focused on getting carbon pricing, which will make these things possible because it will increase the price of fossil fuels and put renewables on an even playing field. And we'll be able to switch more quickly to clean energy and achieve these goals that are so necessary to avert the climate crisis. So I hope that your program would address this.
Absolutely, Marge, and we appreciate you raising it. And Eric, I do wonder what this all means for the fossil fuel industry. What did I see the other day? That oil is below zero? I mean, it's very confusing to figure out economically, but what has all this meant for the fossil fuel industry? The crash in the economy, nobody's flying, far fewer people are driving. Go ahead. I'd love your thoughts, Eric.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to see, hasn't it? I mean, oil collapsed, as you said, below zero. We've seen coal, the percentage of our electricity in this country that is produced from coal, that has been coming down for over a decade now. It used to be about half of our electricity came from coal, and now it's around a quarter of it. But just last week, I saw it was down to 15% because natural gas is so much cheaper right now with the plummeting cost of oil because nobody's driving. So as we look forward into the future, especially with this economic downturn, on the one hand, I'm a little concerned that our attention is going to go back towards, you know, building the economy and less towards worrying about the environment. And we've seen in the past, like in 2008 and 2009, that, you know, we saw oil consumption go back up. But, you know, the difference now is that something really amazing has happened where for the first time, it is actually economically cheaper to produce electricity with renewable sources like wind or solar than it is to do it with coal. So even if you take an economic standpoint or an economic perspective from this, there's no reason to go back to ramping up coal. It's not just better for the environment, but it's actually better for the economy to be producing electricity from these clean sources. So that's my hope, is that we can actually help accelerate that transition that we know needs to happen to clean energy in order to prevent the worst of the climate crisis.
Well, I wonder about that, though, Eric. And I remember before coronavirus, definitely talking to people about how the cost of clean energy was comparable, if not cheaper, than some fossil fuel sources. But what about now, given the crash we've seen in fossil fuel prices, Eric?
Yeah, so that crash is in oil and gas. And so I think that will have an impact where we'll continue to see natural gas use continue to rise, at least in the short term. You know, it's not all a bad story, because we know that natural gas produces half as much CO2 for the same amount of electricity as coal does. So even if we just get rid of coal, and even if we switch it to natural gas, which is obviously not an ideal solution, that still gets us in the right direction. And it's not going to be long before renewable sources are even cheaper than natural gas. And in many parts of the country, they already are. So, you know, what's neat about thinking about renewables is the price of renewables is only going to keep coming down as we keep scaling renewables up, versus any of these fossil fuels, their price in the long term is just going to keep going up because they are a finite resource. So we know that the future is in renewable energy. We know that it's already trending dramatically that way in terms of costs over the last decade, and I expect that trend to continue.
One last question for you, Eric, before we head into a break. There's been a lot of talk about, wow, people are going to meet their clean energy goals this year, and the air is cleaner because no one's driving and no one's flying, you know, and this is great for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. How big an impact have we seen? Is it measurable, or is it just, you know, a little blip?
So it's kind of both, Laura. It is measurable, but in the scheme of things, in terms of carbon, it's going to be a blip. But what I think this really gives us an opportunity to do is to see a vision of the future, right? The loss of pollution that we've seen in major cities, including like New York and LA, but all around the world, that's because all the cars are off the road. And right now it's really depressing because those are desolate streets and the economy is crashing because of it. But if we just replace those cars with electric vehicles, that clean air stays, right? But the streets are now bustling and the economy is now booming. So it gives us a vision of what the future could be once we make this full transition to, for example, electric cars.
Well, Annie, I wanted to ask you that too. How are environmental groups talking about this? Because nobody wants to say, hey, this is a good thing. I mean, people are dying, people are getting very sick. So how are activists describing these air and climate benefits that Eric mentions?
Yeah, it's really a tough position to be in. And I think the big message we're hearing from folks is that, you know, this is not the way we want to do this. That even if the pandemic achieves, you know, some measurable impact, it's certainly not a sustainable impact. It's not as much as we need to do as quickly. And people should not have to die in order for this to happen. You know, we should not have to sacrifice entire communities and so much money in order to make this happen. Just the opposite. It should be protecting public health and injecting money into the economy to respond to this. And so it's sort of an example of what not to do.
All right. Well, coming up, another young activist on her hopes for the future. That plus a lot more of your comments. It's great to hear from you this morning. You can give us a call at 1-800-892-6477 or keep those emails coming in, exchange@nhpr.org. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. On this 50th anniversary of Earth Day, how the coronavirus has changed observations of this day, especially the planned focus on climate change. Exchange listeners, it's been great to hear from you this morning. Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. With me for the hour is NHPR's environment reporter, Annie Ropeek, also Eric Osterberg with Dartmouth College and Roger Stevenson with the Union of Concerned Scientists. And all of you, right back to our callers. Bridget is joining us from Gilmanton. Hi, Bridget. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. So I was wondering, I have a question. So we know that this is a movement that's going to impact my generation, youth and marginalized communities, more than any other generation. And my question is, how are you guys incorporating and highlighting youth voices? Because it is going to impact us the most.
Bridget, it's good to hear from you. And we've been putting a lot of voices of youth definitely in our show today. And Annie, I know that's a huge focus for you. So go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I really do think that it's just completely vital for reporters like me and for, you know, sort of more legacy environmental groups like the Union of Concerned Scientists. And I'm going to be zooming into an event with the League of Conservation Voters and our two senators after this. I think it's just really vital that all of those efforts put youth voices front and center, because we know that Gen Z and younger people, people my age and younger, are, you know, going to inherit this crisis, going to inherit the fallout from coronavirus as well. When I was talking to some of the youth activists in preparation for this show, someone mentioned, you know, that they were born right around 9/11 and they are graduating high school during this. And the climate crisis has been the sort of increasing constant during all of that, right? Like, that was bad enough. And so, I mean, if you just think, like, if older people can really think about what the past 20 years have been like in America, in global policy, and just try to put that in context of the state of the world, the way that, you know, that we've become more conscious of climate change and more conscious of climate response over the course of that time. I mean, to imagine being a young person right now and not being just completely consumed by that, you know, I just think that it is the most important thing for them. And it ties into all of the other issues that affect them economically, other policy issues. So I think that, you know, like in any story, we want to amplify the voices of people who are most affected. And in this case, that's young people.
Bridget, I really appreciate you calling. And toward your point, we have now on the phone another young climate activist. Shannon Jackson is with us, a high school senior at Co-Brown Northwood Academy. And Shannon, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So I understand you're planning to study environmental science in college. What are you learning from the pandemic about the role, Shannon, of scientists in shaping policy?
Well, first of all, I do have to clarify. I think you might have had me mixed up with someone else. I'm studying linguistics, but I do have an answer for this. So I think that this pandemic has shown more than ever the importance of us listening to scientists. Now, there are a lot of people that have been in the opposition to climate change that say the jury is still out. There's no scientific consensus on climate change. And these same people, when the pandemic occurs, are starting to realize that science is a valid thing, that we really need to listen to these scientists because our lives are on the line. Maybe our lives aren't on the line within the next hour or within the next day, but our lives and livelihoods are on the line in the next decade or the next 5 years.
So language matters, Shannon, when it comes to this.
Yeah.
Andy, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, so Shannon has mentioned sort of the disinformation aspect of this, which I think is really interesting. You know, we're seeing a lot of the efforts to undermine safe public health response to coronavirus are coming from similar groups and voices and people of similar political leanings to those who deny climate science, who oppose, renewable energy development and that kind of thing. And I do think it's really interesting. I wonder if maybe Roger can speak to this a little bit, too, about just how science and policy and sort of the importance of facts and language, as Shannon mentioned, has become partisan and how that's playing into coronavirus.
Go ahead, Roger.
It is, it is playing in to the coronavirus. As I said before, what we've seen in the decades of denial on climate, we're seeing compressed in 10, 12 weeks with respect to coronavirus. We're monitoring the government response, and we want to make sure decision makers follow the best available science. In preparing for today, I found that we had actually done a survey of federal scientists in 2018, and several CDC scientists responded. And I just want to quote one of these responses from a CDC scientist. Quote, the idiotic myopia of not wanting to fund global health work will certainly come home to roost with the next flu, Ebola, SARS, Zika, whatever else, pandemic, end quote. And if political leaders continue to minimize the importance of science, disregard science, the public gets confused, and policymakers can't make informed decisions.
Shannon, this gets back to you and your plan to study language and so forth. Tell us a little bit more about that and how you hope to sort of translate that interest into climate policy.
That is a very, very good question. I am super, super interested in language and how it really impacts how people view this crisis, how people view and respond to all sorts of things, especially in the misinformation aspect. So something that I'm seeing a lot right now is that the more urgency we put into our language, the better the outcome is for getting people to get on board and telling people really, what's going on. So using things like 2030, which is basically our deadline to significantly reduce our emissions, is working. I like to use the frog in the boiling water analogy when I'm trying to coach other people about this. So it goes, if you're unfamiliar, you put a frog in a pot of water that's boiling, and it will immediately jump out because it senses it's in danger. But that kind of represents right now coronavirus, right? And you put a frog in lukewarm water and you slowly turn up the heat, and the frog might not jump out until it's too late. And to me, that references the climate crisis. So it's so, so important that we're concise with our messaging and our language in order to get this point home just about the urgency of the situation.
Shannon, one last question for you, please. And again, we've really been trying to fold in the voices of young people this hour, and we really appreciate you being with us. In terms of this language that you use, especially for young people, we heard earlier from a mom, Molly, who has three young children, all around 8 or 10, who are quite anxious, actually, about climate, and coronavirus has only exacerbated that anxiety. So how do you message this, Shannon, again, especially for young people, urgently, but also hopefully?
Right. So we love to say empowering things and really make young people feel empowered. And I think that one of the best remedies for anxiety, at least in my case, is knowing that there's something you can do, having a clear path forward, and just feeling like you have some control of the situation. Because really, as we've, you know, as this coronavirus event has shown, anxiety is all about control, you know? So giving people a clear path forward, giving them something to hold on to, in our case, it's the Green New Deal because it's very concrete, and really making people feel empowered through summits and trainings is a lot of the ways that we boost and increase morale inside the movement. But I'm not going to lie to you, I'm anxious as well. I think we're all anxious.
Shannon, it's really good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
That's Shannon Jackson, a youth organizer with 350 New Hampshire. And last questions for all of you. And Eric, I'll turn to you first. What makes you hopeful these days about this topic of climate change in a time of pandemic?
Well, I think the lesson that we're learning here from the pandemic is that when you combine strong leadership, be that at the local, the state, or the federal level, but strong leadership combined with everybody doing their part, then we can do amazing things, right? In this case, we're saving literally millions of lives. And I'm convinced that we can do the same thing when it comes to climate change or, you know, environmental crises in general. If we apply a strong, bold leadership that is rooted in the best science, and as Shannon was saying, really communicate effectively to people what is at stake and what they need to do. And then when everybody does their part, we can meet these challenges.
Well, let's take another call while we have people wanting to join us. Lots of people with comments today. Griffin is in Rollinsford. Go ahead, Griffin, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. My question is for Shannon. Shannon, you know, there's a chance that the governor might be listening in right now, and I'm curious, you know, as a young person, what would you tell Governor Sununu, someone who has vetoed countless pieces of climate legislation that are really important to helping our generation?
Well, and Griffin, I'm sorry we had to let Shannon go, but Annie Ropeek is here, and Annie has been talking to a lot of young people, and she's pretty young herself, too. So go ahead, Annie.
Yeah, I'll try to field that. Sorry, we had to free up the phone lines. We've been juggling a lot of folks, and we appreciate everyone calling in and showing interest in this topic. You know, Griffin, I would say that I think groups like 350, you know, are just hoping that the state continues to prioritize climate change. We were just starting to see serious climate action gain some traction in the legislature, especially on the Democratic side of the aisle. We were expecting some big fights over renewable energy. And with the legislature on hold, there's a lot of question marks there. There's also, you know, the issue of the Granite Bridge natural gas pipeline proposal that we know is going to come up in the governor's race, and I know is a big focus for groups like 350. So I think the message probably from youth activists and from just people watching the state policy level of this, and I know there's a lot of interest in that, is just to try to keep it in the spotlight and try to balance it and think of it as related to coronavirus response, especially economically.
Well, thank you for calling, Griffin. And here's an email I'd like to close out with from Sandy, who says, pertaining to the current virus outbreak, disruption to our personal economies and the environment, Sandy says, this may be a time to make us reassess what is really important and what skills we can develop to manage in a crisis like this. Sandy says, I'm concerned that a lot of skills have been lost and not passed on to our young people. How to build, mend, repair things, grow and preserve our own food, which Sandy didn't say this, but Roger, I'm guessing those skills also are related to climate. If you are building your own things, you're not buying stuff. If you're mending your own things, you're not buying stuff. If you're growing your own things, you're not, you know, trucks aren't shipping lettuce from California. You're growing it in your backyard. So, Sandy, thank you for the email. And what do you think, Roger?
Well, I think she's absolutely right. And I'll echo what Eric said. This is going to depend on people. People protested on the first Earth Day, and things got done. Individual actions make a difference. You know, changing light bulbs in a house makes a small difference. But over my community of Stratum, collectively, the impact can be profound. Similarly, there's one energy committee in a town that they change out their boilers. That's a good difference. But when you have many dozens of energy committees doing the same thing, taking advantage of good government policy at the federal and state level, informed by science, those differences can be profound. going to take people, just as we're wearing masks and doing our part, staying home. We can do our part on the climate front by reducing consumption, looking at our diet, growing food. I made my own face mask the other day, so I'm at the 101 stage of sewing. But we can all make a difference.
We won't judge your efforts, Roger. And it's really good to talk to you too, Roger. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
That's Roger Stevenson, Northeast Regional Advocacy Director at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Eric Osterberg, it was really good to talk to you too. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was great to be with you, Laura.
That's Eric Osterberg, Associate Professor of Earth Sciences at Dartmouth College. And Annie Ropeek, you're always helping us out. We really appreciate it as always. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Laura.
That's NHPR's Annie Ropeek, our energy and environment reporter. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.